on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Friday, August 1st, 2025 edition. And yeah, that's right. August is here. Summer is, I think we're more than halfway through. Maybe not, but we're almost there. And we're entering a couple months, August, September, where markets tend to get more volatile. And right on cue, the markets got pretty volatile today. So the question is, what does that mean for your portfolio? What does that mean for different asset classes? What does that mean for the broader economy? We're going to look at that and much, much more on this hour. I'm host Justin Klein, and my objective, as always, is to help you become a better investor, answering your finance and investment questions, bringing you actionable data and perspective, developed over 25 years of investment experience. So I'm here for you. Whatever's on your mind, give me a call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hello, Justin and Luke. Today, I'm calling about Fair Isaac Corporation, ticker symbol FICO or FICO. I was wondering what you guys think about the company and its new challenges with, I think his name is Pulte, and his introduction of VantageScore 4.0 as an alternative to FICO, and what you think a buying opportunity or support levels would be for the company. Thank you.
All right. Looking at FICO, FICO, Fair Isaac Corporation, and this is in a strong downtrend. It peaked, let me get a weekly chart here, see how far back it peaked. Yeah, peaked back in 2024 near the end, around $2,400 per share. Now we're down to $1,381 at the close today. So in a strong, strong downtrend, it is, let's see, 42.5% off its 52-week high. No dividend here. And this is really about more competitors coming on to potentially compete with the FICO score, your standard FICO score. As the caller inquired about, there's expansion of use of new types of scoring around credit. And frankly, I think it's long overdue. I think, you know, we talked yesterday about your credit score, what you can do to improve it. And that's certainly helpful for lenders, but you have more and more lenders that are looking at other data points. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, our data is out there. It's pretty well known, you know, where you lived, what your income is, what your spending habits are, all of that. There's so much more data that can be gathered, is being gathered on a daily basis about us. And to summarize our credit score based on just these few things: how often you pay on time, your debt to equity ratio, debt to income ratio, your, you know, how, if you've looked for credit recently, things like that. That's a very small slice of the picture. And it tries to standardize something that, frankly, I think doesn't lend itself to that type of formula and accuracy about our true ability to repay. And I think over time, especially with AI, right, being able to take the data that's out there and find a better way to score a credit that frankly is going to be a lot more accurate. So I think this is on a decline for a very good reason. I think that it's trading at very high multiples, 35 times, so $35 expected to earn next year, 30 this year, and it's a $1,381 stock. That's not cheap. That's not cheap, right? You're talking, 40-ish times forward-looking earnings. Why would you want to pay that premium? Why? I see no reason to pay that type of multiple. Even if you look at based on free cash flow, $747 million on a $37 billion market cap. 2.5% free cash flow yield? Not great. So the multiple is high, and you're entering a time where their usefulness of their tool, the credit score, is becoming less useful. There's going to be way more alternatives that are developed. And so I would not be owning this. It's in a steep downturn. It's not even close to cheap. I would 100% put this on the back burner, watch it. Maybe things change. Maybe they come out with their own AI-driven credit score, and now they're the leaders. That would be, if it was a good leadership team there, that's probably what I'd be going for. But until then, I see no reason to buy it. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so. And here's what we have planned. Our main focus point is about retirement in flux, why more Americans are rethinking their exit timeline. Amid economic uncertainty, growing number of Americans are 50 or older are considering or even reconsidering or delaying retirement. Excuse me. So we'll look at that story. We have others on the docket as well. Let's talk about housing prices. The housing market is suddenly becoming a lot more balanced. What does that mean for prices going forward? In many markets, we're seeing price declines. So we'll talk about that. And is the AI boom bigger than the dot-com bubble? We'll look at some numbers there as well. We also have questions about cover calls and then Civitas, C-I-V-I. And then we have some questions that came in via the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. It's Friday. That's a good thing. We're almost to the end of the week, but we're heading to a break right now. And I welcome your finance and investment questions. But give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
It's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. And let's take a look at the market today. It was a very interesting day. Overall, you had the S&P down. The S&P was down about 101 points, 1.6%. NASDAQ down about 2.25, 472 points. And you had earnings out of Amazon and Apple overnight. And Amazon did much worse than Apple, at least from a market's reaction standpoint. But Apple was still down as well as the broad market was. And this is not just about those earnings, but really about the jobs report. Okay, so Amazon down 8%, Meta down 3% after fading from yesterday's high. Same with Microsoft, that was down about 1.75%. Apple down 2.5%. AMD down 2.6%. A lot of the tech names were weak. You did have some strength out of healthcare. Eli Lilly up 3%. AbbVie up over 3% there. And a lot of the retailers did fairly well. Costco up a little bit. Walmart, Home Depot, TJ Maxx, etc. In the finance space, a lot of the market was down. JP Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, all up over 2-3% respectively. And it was really about the jobs report. This jobs report was, there's no really way to sugarcoat it. It was bad. It not only did, was there a strong miss for the current month or this last month in July, where we only created about 73,000 new jobs. But the last few months were also downgraded considerably. Okay. So May was downgraded all the way to 19,000 jobs. That's it, 19,000 jobs. And the unemployment rate ticked up to 4.2, but if you actually look deeper, it's 4.248. So you were just a couple of hundredths of a percentage point away from rounding up to 4.3. Okay. So the last previous 2 months were downwardly revised for June and May by 258,000 jobs. So the expectations for July were actually 110,000 jobs. You missed that, 73,000. Unemployment rate ticked up. And these 3 months were the three weakest months for job growth since 2010. If you get rid of COVID, right? You throw out COVID. So that is, you know, pretty remarkable. And if you look, if you take out healthcare, which we know is a pretty non-cyclical sector, we lost 53,000 jobs in May, 45,000 jobs in June, and 300 jobs in July. So negative in all 3 months. And manufacturing lost 26,000 jobs in both May and June. And July lost 11,000 jobs. So now the odds of a rate cut in September are 80%. It's pretty clear we're going to get that outside of a very strong number for August. Probably not a lot of impetus for that. And that was really the big news. You also had July ISM manufacturing index came at 48 versus consensus 49.5. That missed. Production did increase, but employment fell from 45 to 43.3. The price index fell. That's a positive on the inflation front. It did fall from 69.7 to 64.8. So that's a little grain of positiveness. And the final July global manufacturing PMI was essentially in line, 49.8. Remember, 50 is flat, so it's still in slightly contractionary territory. June's number was 52.9. So it hit consensus, but still a down, you know, back into shrinking territory when it comes to global manufacturing. July consumer sentiment came in at 61.7. Consensus was 62. That is up, though, from June's number of 60.7. So that's where we're at. That was the market today. It was markets are coming off of a lot of optimism, 52 week highs. And I've said this for the past couple of weeks. I said over the next, between now and the end of the quarter, we're probably headed for some sort of modest pullback in markets. Nothing crazy, but you can just see the expectations and the amount of money going to meme stocks again, and just investors getting out over their skis when it comes to risk and just investing in the dumbest things and the companies that don't make money and highly speculative positions. And that kind of marked a sentiment top for me. And now you just need some sort of catalyst. You never know what it is. We also have the tariff situation. President Trump put more tariffs on, in many cases, much bigger than what was announced back in April. So that's of note as well. The dollar index was down 1.2%. Gold finished up 1.5%. Bitcoin was down 3.1%. Interesting, considering it was a risk-off day in markets. WTI down 2.8%, down 3.3% on the week. So that was the market today. Very interesting. We're going to head into a break, and we'll take more of your questions next here on Invest Talk.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is about how many retirees are looking to rethink their exit timeline. And this is a recent survey from F&G Annuities. And they reveal that a growing number of pre-retirees are rethinking, or even if they will retire. Two-thirds of respondents who are approaching retirement say they're either considering pushing back that retirement date or already have. And this is a large increase from a year ago, which is interesting considering, you know, the market's still up year over year. And one in four pre-retirees have definitely delayed, a 14% increase from last year. Now, why are they doing that? 48% worry they simply don't have enough money saved to retire comfortably. 44% cite inflation as a big reason. And 42%, they want more financial options and a broader safety net. And 34% are worried about a potential economic downturn. Now, for those that have already retired, a lot of them are contemplating coming back. Almost a third, 29%. Said they're considering unretiring. And that number jumps to 54% if you're talking about Gen Xers, young retirees, those that retired early. And so that's one good lesson here, is that this is not just about the numbers. It's really all about, or a lot of it's about the qualitative aspect of retirement as well. And only 28% of baby boomers want to unretire. So you can see it's a lot of those younger people. And 42% miss the intellectual stimulation that work provides. Talked about this many times. You have to find ways to fill your time. It's not just about not working. It's about doing what you want to do on a daily basis. It's about financial freedom to do that. So we talk about financial freedom all the time. It's not just about retirement. I know we have clients that made a lot of money in a lucrative field, and now they're working for a nonprofit, or, you know, they're working part-time at, you know, in their local community, or maybe they started a small business, things like that. And that's a good way to fill that gap. Now, 40% of those that wanted to potentially unretire, they wanted to expand their financial options. 36% remain concerned about inflation. That's down from 44% from last year, so that's a positive. But 33% don't want to feel a lack of purpose. Now, they looked at how Americans graded their retirement preparedness. Only 26% gave them an A. 26% thought that they were in good position, give themselves an A. 32% think it's a C or lower. That's not great. And on social connections for retirement, 41% gave themselves a C or worse. So this is, you know, you're approaching half are saying, hey, I'm not socially connected in retirement. And on personal fulfillment, responses were split pretty evenly. 28% gave themselves an A, but 28% also gave themselves a C or lower. 47% of adults over 50 are not working with a financial professional. And I think this is part of the issue as well. This is something that we talk about all the time with our clients, that it's not just about the numbers. You want someone to run the numbers. You want somebody to understand, help you understand the path in retirement from an investment standpoint, a spending standpoint, making sure you're trying to contingency plan for emergencies, things that are unforeseen, etc. But it's really about the fulfillment in life. And 29% of investors say their advisors place little or no emphasis on fulfillment when planning for retirement. Nearly a third. And that's worrisome to me, because that's a big part of our job. Not necessarily finding what that is, but at least giving you a full grasp of your financial situation and lifestyle. What that lifestyle will look like. Will it give you fulfillment? And can you afford it? Now, 6 in 10 between the ages of 45 and 75 are concerned that Social Security benefits will be reduced based on recent action by the current administration, and 14% definitely considering claiming Social Security earlier than originally planned. So that's another aspect that they're worried about as well. Now, I think that's a bit overblown. I think there's just too much political pushback for them to have widespread changes to the Social Security system, especially with the amount of money that's been paid in. And I mean, let's just devalue the dollar, right? Find ways to allocate resources in that direction. So I wouldn't worry too much about that, but it's clear that a lot of retirees are. Well, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this headline: where and how to invest your long-term care bucket. We'll get to that story on Monday, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls now on 888-99-CHART.
Weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Invest Talk. I recently bought Civitas, if I'm saying that right. It's a natural gas company. I know you guys have talked about it on the show a while ago, back when it was trading much higher. I picked some up maybe a couple weeks ago, as I saw it had hit a price target, and I think there was like a trade deal made between us and Europe.
You know what doesn't belong in your epic summer plans? Getting burned by your old wireless bill. While you're planning beach trips, barbecues, and three-day weekends, your wireless bill should be the last thing holding you back. Maybe you should make the switch to Mint Mobile. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And, for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for $15 a month. So, while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. I like Mint Mobile, and I think you will too. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/investtalk. That's mintmobile.com/investtalk. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
And then it shot up, and I was thinking, man, this is going to be pretty nice. And then, you know, I checked today and, you know, now it's down, I think, 4 or 5%. I plan on holding it for a while. I'm not too worried about it. I'm just curious what you guys think of the company, because when I was looking at it, it seemed extremely undervalued. I know these kind of names can be volatile, but I'm just curious what you guys think. And I took a half position. Now I'm thinking about maybe waiting longer to maybe take a full position if it keeps dropping. But I'd love to hear what you guys think, and I'll listen on the show. Thanks. Bye.
All right, looking at Civitas Resources. This is out of Denver, Colorado, oil and gas E&P company, $2.6 billion market cap. And, you know, it is a volatile name, and this is a high-risk way to play the oil and gas space. It is cheap if you're looking at it based on its free cash flow, $876 million, and a market cap of $2.6 billion. So, based on that, you're talking about a 30% free cash flow yield. The issue, though, is that cash flow is going towards servicing the debt. And they do have a good amount of debt on their balance sheet. A times interest earned is 3.3, which is solid. Return equity is 12.7, which is good. But obviously, if profits don't turn around or cash flow doesn't stay steady here or start to rise, you know, there could be issues with the debt. So that's why it's risky. Okay. Now, the good thing is cash flow has steadied out here, just below about $1 billion trailing 12 months. And the dividend, don't expect that dividend to be what you're going to get. Okay. They have a dividend policy based on their cash flow, based on their earnings. And this has come down from $2.15 back in 2023. Down to 50 cents. So the good news is, if things improve in the oil and gas space, you get oil back up above, you know, $80 a barrel, profits start to turn around here, you could easily see that dividend grow from where it's at. Okay. But you could also see it shrinking to support the debt, etc. Right now, about 45% of cash flow is going towards that dividend. So I like it. I think it's a good risk versus reward, but understand this is a very high risk way to play the oil and gas space. So you need the broader E&P market to improve and oil prices and gas prices to start to strengthen. So far, they're kind of hanging in there. They're more neutral than anything, and it could break either way. A lot depends on supply and demand dynamics. Oil supply here domestically is starting to shrink. You're seeing rig count come down, and then demand, obviously, that's going to depend on the global economy. So overall, I think it's good risk versus reward, but understand that it is high risk. Now let's play two in a row from 8 to 8, 99 chart.
I would like to know what characteristics you look for when doing a covered call strategy. I know that you had mentioned that you have done a covered call strategy on Buckle in the past, and I was just wondering, like, what do you look for in stocks to do the cover call strategy on? Thank you for everything that you do, and I look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast. My name is Kyle, and I'm from Michigan. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you for the call, Kyle. And you're correct. Buckle is a name that is in our cover call strategy for KPP Financial, which is called Equity Income Plus. And it's one of our smaller names, about $2.5 billion market cap. I think it's a small, if I remember correctly, our target allocation is only about 2% of the portfolio, 2 or 3%. So it's not a big allocation, but we like the name. They pay a dividend. And what we look for are, number one, good quality businesses. That's number one, okay? You want a floor to the price. Because remember, when you're selling a cover call, you're selling upside for a hedge on the downside. But if you have a solid business with a good balance sheet, good profitability, trading at reasonable valuations, oftentimes the downside is fairly minimal. And for Buckle, return equity is 43%. They have net $300 million in cash on their balance sheet on a $2.5 billion market cap. And they pay a little dividend, 2.8% current dividend yield. So overall, it's a solid quality business. That's number one. Number two, if they have liquid option market, right, to be able to sell options, there's got to be enough open interest. Now, for a novice average investor, it doesn't need to be a lot, right, because you're not trading very many option contracts. But there needs to be some liquidity there where you're not taking a dive on the premium that you're accepting for these call options. And then obviously from the technical perspective, you want stocks generally to be in an uptrend. One thing that most covered call investors get wrong is that they think, oh, I don't want to be in the money. Well, you do want to be in the money because it means you made money. Okay. So if it's a $50 stock, you sell a 55 strike. It's much better that the stock goes to 60 than it goes to 45. It sounds fun to make money on that call option, but overall, you still want that stock to go up. So don't play games with yourself. Understand what it is. It's a risk-reducing strategy, not risk-eliminating. And you have to find other ways to reduce risk as well, which is, once again, good businesses, good balance sheets, good cash flows, and then diversify. Don't focus on one sector. Don't chase it high implied volatility either. So a lot of people do. Big option premiums, but usually those option premiums are big for a reason, and that means you'll probably get burned by owning the underlying stock. Thanks for the call from Michigan. Now, it is Friday. So let's check in on a quick rundown of the key benchmarks for the week. The two-year treasury yield ended at 3.71%. Last week was at 3.9%. So what you see is a big volatility in the treasury market today and yesterday. You had up big yesterday, yields up big, and then crashed down today. So it's the market pricing in a more hot, more dovish Fed, heading into the back half of the year and into next year, especially rate cut in September, probably at least one more by year end as well. Remember, only three more Fed meetings. So that was the 2-year yield. That's why the 2-year yield moved down so dramatically this week. Now the 10-year, 4.226% at the close, down from 4.388%. What you see there is that it's not as reactive to near-term economic moves as the 2-year. So the 10-year was down, but not as much, and that means the yield curve steepened. Gold was at $33.48 an ounce. That's a $16 increase over last week. So obviously more economic uncertainty, lower rates. Dollar was a bit weaker, especially today. Silver, $36.88 an ounce. That was actually down from down $1.31 on the week, but still nicely above where it was a little over a year ago when we were at 22.80, 77 weeks ago. So pretty interesting move there. I think silver could have more of a pullback, but generally I still like the precious metal space. Oil, $67.46 per barrel, up $1.98 compared to last week. Gasoline, $3.15, a 1 cent decline from the previous week. And here in California, we're averaging $4.48 per gallon. For comparison, Nebraska, I have some neighbors from Nebraska. Gas there is averaging $2.95 a gallon today. So that was a rundown of some major economic data points as we close the week for August 1st, 2025. Let's talk about the housing market. Okay. Housing market is getting worse. Simple as that. Last Wednesday, we had the existing home sales number, and it fell near the lowest level in 17 years. Okay. Now, to be frank, it's still in kind of the range it's been in for the past 2 years, but now it's in the low end of that range. And it's kind of what you should expect. Existing homes sold back in 2000, it's called pre-pandemic, was hanging around the 5 to 5.5 million homes per month. Now we're down to not even 4 million. And there's reason to believe it could get worse. U.S. housing inventory is up to 4.7 months of supply. That is, frankly, a balanced market, roughly. You could argue it's slightly a buyer's market, and that should bring prices down over time. And I think that's probably the case here. Cancellations are picking up, meaning more and more buyers are getting cold feet for a couple of reasons. One is maybe they're just balking at that mortgage rate, still hanging around 7%. But more likely is that the home that they are looking to sell is not selling. That's where their capital is coming from. Their down payment is coming from. Now, the base case is there will be rate cuts. It will revive demand a little bit. Unemployment rate won't rise considerably. But even then, prices will probably fall 5% to now and the end of next year. This is broadly. Some markets will probably be worse. Some markets will be better. It's very localized. But this is the national market. I'm talking to a national audience. On an inflation-adjusted basis, it'll probably be even worse, right? And that's what you should expect going forward. From the early 80s until just after the pandemic, right? Let's call it 2022. Housing prices drastically outperformed inflation. Couple reasons for that. Number one is mortgage rates came down considerably. So people were able to buy a more expensive house and have similar payments. And number two is, what was number two? Sometimes thoughts just escape you. There's another reason for it. I'll come back to it. But basically, for many decades, housing prices were outstripping inflation. Now you have headwinds. The major one is rates. Rates staying high and trending higher. Typically, mortgage rates in general go in the 30 to 40 year cycles. 30, 40 years up, 30, 40 years down. Closer to 30 than it is 40, typically. And you can see here is you're not getting a step back in the mortgage rate. Even though the Fed cut rates last year, remember? But cut 100 basis points. And so you're unlikely to see great returns nominally, inflation adjusted from housing prices. They can still go up nominally. But in many markets, I think you're going to see negative real returns on an inflation-adjusted basis for housing prices. It's not the 80s, 90s, or 2000s anymore. This is a new era. And if you go look in previous eras, when rates were, rates were trending higher from, the 60s and 70s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, those were times where inflation-adjusted housing prices didn't really go anywhere, right? Now, a big variable in this, where housing prices are going to go, is are the home builders. Are they going to hold back supply? Pulte and D.R. Horton, two of the largest home builders in the country, reported last week and said they will strive to maintain their returns, meaning their margins. Means they're probably not going to flood the market with new homes. That's going to push prices dramatically lower. So most likely it's a correction in time where you get middling, just sluggish housing market. And you get a correction that lasts probably 5, 7, maybe 10 years. Now there's a drastic possibility, which is the market does crash. You have economic calamity of some sort. Problem with that is that there's just not really a setup for it. There's not an 08 setup. there are not a lot of people who have mortgages they can't afford because they're locked into ultra low mortgage rates, probably steady jobs, and manageable debt servicing costs. And guess what? 40% of homeowners are mortgage free, which means if they want to sell their homes, if any of these, this cohort wants to sell their homes, they're going to be pretty patient. They can afford to wait for the price that they want. So there's not a lot of forced sellers like there was in 08. So a crash is extremely unlikely. It's more of a continuation of a malaise that will probably last a lot longer than you expect. Now, as we go to a break, let's briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. In the KPP Insight section, we discuss the labor market update, and the stock section, stock ideas section, we mentioned a hotel company and now an agribusiness. And then the portfolio management section, we touched on a brand new investment strategy called custom indexing. But we're going to head to a final break. Let's get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Justin, Luke, calling in regards to Accenture PLC, ticker ACN. Just hit my price target at 260. What do you think about picking this up for a long-term hold? Thank you.
Wow. Okay. Accenture, price target of 260. This is in a strong downtrend, down 35.9% from its 52-week high. Its all-time high was back in 2021 at $415 per share, now at $255 per share. It is at the 100-month moving average. Probably going to be good support. I kind of like that. But that's about it. From the technical perspective, overall, it's been trending negatively since that 2021 high. Generally, Accenture has been a very good business. Profitability is strong. It's a leading IT consulting firm. $10 billion in free cash flow on a $162 billion enterprise value. So pretty high free cash flow yield here, which I really like. Free cash flow is at an all-time high. But what's the chart telling us? That's the confusing thing here. The chart is telling you something. Now, you could have a tight stop on it. There is good support here. Let me find. Yeah, the better support's right around 245. We're at 255 now, so we're not far. So I'm okay buying it here at these levels in this range. I do think it's cheap. But the question is, what is the market telling you? Why is it in this downtrend? Because earnings are still relatively strong. Earnings up 8% this year, 7% next year, $13.80. It's a high teens multiple. Not bad for a company that's growing above the market average. They're global, so there's definitely demand for their products. It's the question is it, when I say products, their services. Is AI disrupting them in some way? That would be something I would do a deeper dive on. I actually haven't looked into Accenture in a while to really give you some color there, but it does worry me how just dramatically weak this name is. Relative strength is 12. And that's pretty rare for a company that does not have any debt, pretty much, still has good cash flow, pays a dividend. What is the broader narrative that the market is telling you? So I do deeper research, but I do like the technicals. I like the fundamentals, but I need to feel comfortable that AI isn't going to disrupt their services. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's talk about some parallels between today's market and 1999. Back then, 33% of the S&P was the tech sector. Today, it's 34%. And back then, eight of the top 10 companies in the S&P are in the tech sector. By contrast, back then, only 5 of the 10 biggest companies in the S&P were in the tech sector. Back then, you know, names like GE, Citi, Exxon, Walmart, and Home Depot all were in that top 10. Today, you only have the only two that aren't in the tech sector are Berkshire Hathaway and JP Morgan. So the question is this a bubble? In some ways, I think there's a lot of argument for that. No, there's not so much. One way to look at it, a good argument, is the 12-month forward-looking earnings valuation of the top 10 stocks in the S&P is higher than it was 25 years ago. The tech sector right now, S&P trading at 29.5 times forward-looking earnings. But it's not as high as it was in 2000, which was 50 times. Okay. So on a broad market basis, I would say it's not as frothy. But when you're constant, or it is as frothy. When it comes to the tech sector, though, it's not as frothy as it was back then. So I wouldn't say that you need to jump away from tech completely, but it's certainly elevated in a lot of similar ways as it was back then. Well, that about does it. We made it to the end of the week. I know it was a crazy week for me. Hopefully next week will be more fruitful, and the week after that as well. So I'm Justin Klein. If today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, whether it all works for you, let's talk about it. We offer no-cost portfolio reviews. They help you bring clarity and confidence to your situation. So if you need help, head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. And we thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, showed success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your weekend.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.